that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
With a new podcast every day of the Premier League season, this is Football Social Daily.
It's the start of a brand new week at work for everyone except Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who is enjoying his first day of redundancy after the Manchester United board finally pulled the trigger and decided that enough was enough. Legend or no legend, it was time for Ole to go. That is understandably going to be the focus of today's Football Social Daily. And if you want to keep up to date with the picture as it develops, as it unfolds over the next few days and weeks, there is no better place to do it than on this daily podcast. Subscribe or follow. We'll make sure you get the most informed and the most up-to-date news when it comes to who is going to be the next man in the job at Old Trafford. To talk us through that on today's show, we've drafted in Manchester United fan and sports social journalist Joel Tudor. How are you doing, Joel?
Good morning. I can finally show my face again.
You sound quite chipper. I can already sense in your voice.
I've got a bit of a spring in my step, to be fair.
Well, that gives a hint of what's to come. Niall McCorn alongside him. How are you doing, Niall?
I'm good. I'm not quite feeling as cold as Joel is. I can see his heart is slowly unfreezing.
Feeling all warm inside today. It's the central heating or something.
It's really interesting, the kind of mood when you judge it on social media. It's half and half. It's people are pleased that Solskjaer's gone and they've moved on, but they feel sorry for him as a man, and they're kind of like, almost, this hasn't dented your legendary status at the club. This, your failures are down to the board rather than you as a manager. It's really interesting. It's quite a unique situation in football. We're going to talk about it in a minute. We're also going to talk about transfers on today's podcast, with a potential move for Mason Mount being mooted. And as it is the Monday after the weekend's action, we will wrap up today's podcast with a quick game of heroes and villains from the weekend's action as well. But let's start off on Football Social Daily. But let's start off on Football Social Daily talking Ole out. Well, Ole gone. Solskjaer has been sacked. Is this a surprise, Niall? Is it kind of overdue? We knew it was going to happen, and we joked before the weekend came, oh, if Manchester United lose to Watford, that's it, thinking that Manchester United would not lose to Watford. But then 4-1 loss, and Ole's looking for a new job.
Yeah, I think that you can't lose 4-1 to Watford in the manner that they did, and with the performances being the way they have recently, and not expect some sort of change to happen. Even though Manchester United have been somewhat reluctant to pull the trigger on Solskjaer, so to speak, especially after the losses to Liverpool and Manchester City in back-to-back home games before the international break, a lot of people felt, particularly after the Liverpool game, that maybe that was the right time to make a change. And we've seen it and said it before on Football Social Daily that the international break is a really good time to make a change of management, because you've got 2 weeks where the players are away on international duty, and when they come back, they can come back to a fresh start, and it actually gives your management team, whoever you've brought in, a couple of weeks to get their feet under the table and maybe start implementing philosophies and all the rest of it. They decided not to do that. They decided to leave it through the international break. And I think probably Solskjaer knew that an adverse result against Watford might result in a change in management. I think you could probably see it in his eyes, actually, sadly, by the end. And it's disappointing for Manchester United fans and for the man himself, because he wanted the best for the club. You know, he's a Manchester United fan. He's a Manchester United legend. That will remain, despite the fact that it's ended in rather unsavoury circumstances, particularly in terms of results on the field. Off the field, I think he's conducted himself brilliantly, with class, with respect, with dignity, doing a parting interview with Manchester United is something very rare that we've not really ever seen, I don't think, since we've been doing this podcast. No. A manager doing a goodbye interview.
Not necessarily wise, I'm not sure either.
Well, I think by all accounts, he actually asked to do it. He asked the club to do it. And I think that's the measure of the man himself. It is unusual. It is left field, but certainly it left many a Manchester United fan feeling emotional. But as I said before, losing 4-1 to Watford, and it could have been 4-0 in the first half, to be fair. That first 45 minutes was a real turgid, shocking display, really, from United. And they needed to pull their socks up in the second half. They did so. Donny van de Beek came on, tried to make an impact. They pulled one back. But Maguire gets sent off after another poor individual error from a Manchester United player. And then they crumble at the end. And, you know, losing games is part of football. I think Solskjaer mentioned that in a post-match interview recently. But it's the manner in which you lose. And to lose 5-0 to Liverpool, 2-0 to Manchester City, and now 4-1 to Watford, a side who only got promoted to the Premier League from the Championship last season. I think that you have to suggest that from the recent form, losing 5 out of the last 7 games, and the manner of the defeat against Watford, it's probably no real surprise. But it's sad, and I think that he wanted the best for the club, as I say. It's unfortunate that it didn't work out, but that's the ruthlessness of football. And as you say, he'll be on the hunt for the next job, wherever that may be.
Watford were excellent, by the way. Look, give them their dues. They were...
Apart from Ismail Assar missing 2 penalties in the first 10 minutes.
But Watford were as good as Manchester United were bad. If you want a review of the game, we're not going to get dug into the details, but if you want to look back at that game, then Fergal and the boys were on last night doing the post-match review from the weekend. You can find that on the feed now. But Joel, you're a Manchester United fan. I've already hinted you're satisfied with this decision from the board. Do you think... Well, firstly, how do you feel? Is it the right move? And do you think Manchester United have a plan from here? Do you think there is an idea?
Is there a plan at all?
Well, that's it. That's the question. That's something that's been levelled at the board quite a lot. But do they know what's going to happen from here? Does anyone know?
Well, clearly the club didn't know what was going to happen next week, considering they waited until after the international break to actually do anything, which kind of says everything you need to know about what's going on at the top of the club. When you look at it, in terms of how I feel, if you look at it from like a sentimental, personal point of view, I don't think there'll be a United fan who looked at that interview and thought, I'm so happy he's going. Because he's probably the only manager we've had in the last decade where you look at him and he actually genuinely wanted what was best for the club. It wasn't like a Mourinho where he knew in those 3 years, it doesn't matter who he gets, he just wants success. And if he goes after that, no matter how the club is in that time after him, he's done his job. Whereas Solskjaer is probably the only manager who's going to leave the club in a far, far, far better position than what he's left it, than what he found it. Even with Alex Ferguson, he left the club, you know, with players who were on the way out. They were reached the peak. They were starting to turn off. Every other manager's left it in an absolute state. Whereas now, he leaves it for the next guy who is ready to go on and probably challenge, bearing a minor 2 or 3 little additions. And I think that's testament to the guy he is. I think history will look back on his time kindly.
Isn't that also testament to Ed Woodward and testament to the Glazers? And they get zero credit for what they do at Manchester United. And I understand the narrative around that, but there's investment in a squad there that has been improved. And the man managing that squad hasn't been right, but the players are there.
For this season, I'd agree in terms of, you could say this summer, he's got the players that he needed in Ronaldo, Rafael Varane, Jadon Sancho. I mean, any manager who got those players, you'd say, right, we've done our job now. And I agree, this season was the season where you could look at Solskjaer objectively and say, this is your side now, let's see how far you can take it. And that's why I feel it was justified to let him go, because maybe last summer was an absolute calamity. Let's not forget, you got Donny van de Beek, who I felt was like a board signing, where just because Real Madrid kind of were interested, they felt he had to get him and he didn't use him in the end, which shows that he wasn't really someone who he truly wanted or trusted.
Would you not say that more about Ronaldo? Because Manchester City were definitely interested in Ronaldo.
Well, it's been a case for many years now where Ed Woodward seems to have this kind of ego about him where when a better club a better team such as City are interested in a player, they kind of jump to it as if to say, we're meant to get him because City are interested in him. It's happened with Sanchez. It happened with Harry Maguire. Ronaldo, I feel like there's an element of, because City wanted him, we're going to get him, rather than, does he fit our team? I feel like with Ronaldo, I'd rather have him than not have him. But last season, we got Donny van de Beek, Edinson Cavani on deadline day, Ahmad on deadline day. That wasn't a planned summer at all. It was calamity. So this summer, to be fair, the Glazers and Ed Woodward did their job. They got the players that he wanted. And I feel like it's justified the way it's gone, because the table started to turn after the Aston Villa game that we lost. I could see it when I was at the game. The players were walking. There was one instance where I knew changed when Sancho lost the ball. Edinson Cavani blasted past him from the striker position and went to retrieve the ball. And that's when I knew they're not working hard enough. They're not inspired by the manager, and things need to change after that. The writing was on the wall after Liverpool. And how can I don't understand how you would wait for a Watford game to say now's the right time to let him go.
Well, the comments, makes zero sense. The comments after the game from David De Gea, for example, they suggest that was a team that had stopped playing for Solskjaer. Like, you can't come out in an interview and go, we don't know what we're doing with the ball, we don't know what we're doing without the ball, because that is pointing the finger.
That you can tell the players are lost.
Completely.
Like, they don't know what they're doing on the pitch. And if you've got a keeper who can see the whole pitch, can see what's going on, like Niall said before, he saved two penalties and he's waiting for a reaction from his players, and suddenly Harry Maguire, the captain, gets sent off. They can see four goals. I mean, it shows everything that needs to be said. The team are just not well coached at all. And that's why I feel like we've got a good crop of players, but we need an elite manager, because Solskjaer's reached his level at this level to take us to the next level, which he cannot do.
Who's that manager going to be then, Niall? Because I think for the reasons we've outlined over the last 10 minutes, it doesn't feel like this was necessarily a planned decision. It doesn't feel like the next manager is lined up. There's loads of people being linked. Zinedine Zidane has been linked with the Manchester United job for ages. It feels like he's distanced himself slightly. Mauricio Pochettino, he's the favourite at the moment. Brendan Rodgers, I heard he's expressed an interest in the role, whatever that means. Ten Hag in the mix. George Mendes, he says he wants Sevilla coach.
But you say George Mendes wants it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? You get it. So, I mean, there's a fair few names in there. Ronaldo as a player manager, who knows going to get this? I mean, who do you think's most likely to walk into that job at the moment?
Well, at the moment, it's Michael Carrick. And he'll take charge of Tuesday's game, tomorrow's game, in fact, against Villarreal, away from home in the Champions League. And that looks like it's probably going to be the case for the Chelsea game as well. I can't imagine they'll get someone in place by Chelsea, which is next Sunday. A huge game, by the way, for Manchester United, because I think, what are they, 12 points off the top at the moment? If they lose to Chelsea, that gets extended to 15. And we know the Premier League's a funny league, and if you get a run together, you can soar up the table. But to make up 15 points on a team like Chelsea, if United are truly going to be title challengers, maybe that boat has now sailed, who knows? But it's going to be a hell of a task. Don't want to tempt fate, though, because you know what these things are like when managers get changed and, you know, interim bosses come in. Sometimes you get some weird results, and it wouldn't be too much of a shock, I suppose, if Manchester United went and beat Villarreal and beat Chelsea just because of this new manager bounce. But the way they're going to do it is they're going to put an interim manager in charge until the end of the season. And then they're
going to... Do you think it's going to be to the end of the season? You don't think anything's going to... You don't think there's going to be a permanent manager?
This is what the club statement said within Solskjaer's dismissal. It said, we will put Michael Carrick in charge for the time being until we find an interim manager until the end of the season. Now, say what you want about that. A lot of people have had question marks over the club appointing an interim manager before then going to appoint another interim manager. So Carrick's the caretaker. Then it's interim to the end of the season. And then a clean break in the summer where a manager
Solskjaer's
can come in and
in
start.
The first place. Let's not forget
he did so well. They couldn't not give him the job, could they? Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, after the start he had, he forced their hand. And you're exactly right, Jim, that was the plan. So the difference is, at this moment in time, the landscape is a lot thinner in terms of managers than it was maybe even 4 or 5 weeks ago, where if you look at someone like Antonio Conte, who could have been an option for Manchester United, perhaps 18 months, like he's got a contract at Tottenham for 18 months, would have been perfect. 6 months now until the end of the season, and then another year. And if things don't work out, then you can sever ties there. But he's off the table. He's gone to Tottenham Hotspur. Zinedine Zidane, as you say, doesn't really know English. He's learning English, allegedly, and has never really been interested in the Premier League. He wasn't asked about coming to England as a player, was happy to stay at Juventus and Real Madrid, understandably so. And he's obviously been a Real Madrid manager and won multiple Champions Leagues. He's linked. Brendan Rodgers, his... not exactly had a great season with Leicester, but what he's done there in the time he's been there since he arrived from Celtic has been very, very good. One in the FA Cup last year, fifth in the last two seasons. So there are good, credible names out there. But are they names which will be right for the Manchester United job and the Manchester United project? That is another question. And I think that's a deeper question, which we could do a whole new podcast on. But some of the names that you've mentioned, Rodgers, Zidane, Ten Hag at Ajax is a name that seems to be popular amongst the fans, particularly on social media. And also Maurizio Pochettino, which seems to have grown in popularity this morning, especially on social media, with rumours that he's unhappy at PSG and he's ready to quit to come to Manchester United. So there's a few different options and avenues, but it's hard to distinguish whether it's actually going to be the case where they go for a manager for 6 months, like what the statement suggested, and then get someone different in the summer, or do they just go for it now? Just get Pochettino now. Get him in now and then give him more time. It's a tough question, really.
It's a long time to go between now and the end of the season to trust an interim manager like Michael Carrick, who has very little
26 games to go.
It's the main bulk of the season, isn't it?
There's 2/3 of the season left. And, you know, we've still got Christmas to come. So, you know, it's a big decision. I mean, if you decide to go interim till the end of the season and you end up in a similar position to Solskjaer, someone does really, really well, and then you have to give them the job. It almost seems as if I was in charge of these conversations, which obviously I'm not, I would be saying, forget the interim thing and just go and get a manager to come in now and do the job immediately. Mm. And then, you know, 6 months, say it's Pochettino, for example, 6 months of Pochettino is better than 6 months of an interim manager who might not be there next season anyway. So if you're talking about the players getting on side with a project, are they more likely to listen to someone who they know is going to be there for 2-3 years? Or are they going to listen to someone who's going to be there for 6 months? Or does it really matter? Because he's gone in the summer anyway. I think it's an interesting mental and sort of mentality question as well to be had there. But if it was me, I don't know who, but just go and get someone and give them an 18-month or 2.5-year contract and let them work now rather than putting an interim in place. But that's the route it looks like United will go down.
How do Manchester United not balls this up again, Joel? Because they've ballsed it up a lot recently. When you look at the succession of managers since Alex Ferguson left, I think David Moyes felt like, when he was appointed, I think most people felt like that was a good appointment. It was a good long-term position. It didn't work out for whatever reasons, but it felt right. Since then, Louis van Gaal, Jose Mourinho, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, the general consensus have been these aren't the right appointments before they've even been made. And Manchester United have still made them and it hasn't worked out. It feels like they've already got this one wrong because the man they needed at Manchester United, in my view, was Antonio Conte. But Daniel Levy saw that coming. He knew that Conte was free, he was available, and he knew he had to make a decision on the future of Nuno Espirito Santo to get Conte in before Manchester United had to make that decision. So it feels like they've already messed it up to a certain extent. What do they do now to make sure that doesn't get any worse, that they get the right man?
Well, I think based on what you've just said, I think that's the reason why they want to wait until the end of the season, because they've been backed into a corner now. It's a corner that they didn't expect to be in 3 months ago when they gave him a 3-year contract. So now I feel like they have no choice but to make sure that they really thoroughly look at all of the candidates and understand, because this next appointment is one of the most important appointments in our last decade, because we've literally got a team now for the first time since our 2012-2013 season when we won it. It's the first credible team who can, I think, genuinely challenge the likes of Chelsea, Liverpool and City.
It's definitely a better team than what Mourinho left.
Oh, easily. And I think that's why I said, I think history's going to look back on Solskjaer's time, let's say in 1 to 2 years, and we'll see how good this team really is. Because like Louis van Gaal's side, where we had Schneiderlin, Schweinsteiger, all go.
But it's not even the players in that situation, Joel. Under Mourinho, it was the toxicity around the club. I think the whole of Manchester could feel it. You know, we've spoken about it on the podcast, Jim, where, you know, it felt like there was this grey, gloomy cloud over Old Trafford when Mourinho was there. And as soon as he left, that toxic just fog kind of lifted. And Solskjaer said that in his parting interview. He said, I'm pretty good at that, building a culture within a squad. And I think, in all fairness to Solskjaer, if we're going to pick positives out of his tenure, it definitely does feel like there's a more positive vibe around, obviously not in recent weeks with the results and stuff, but on the whole, in the 3 years, it's a better squad. Is a better mentality, is a better vibe around the place. People actually enjoy watching and playing for Manchester United now, whereas maybe under Mourinho they didn't.
They needed Solskjaer as the buffer between...
He was the bridge. He was the bridge to make things a little rosier, because like he said in the interview, the environment's better now. Yeah. All the players have come out and said how much, on their social medias, how much of a great guy he is. And he's not alienated anyone. He's not put Schweinsteiger in the reserves. He's not fallen out with Paul Pogba. everyone's kind of galvanized, but you just couldn't get them to the level that they need to get to. And that's fine. It happens in football where a manager just reaches his ceiling. It happens in business everywhere. You need good leaders to take you to the next level and compete constantly. And I don't think any United fan will hold a grudge to him unless you're these kind of weird Twitter ones who like think his legacy's tarnished or something. Absolutely not. And I definitely think in 2 years, let's say for me, if Pochettino takes over, he's got an amazing set of young players there. Like Jadon Sancho, one of the best players in Europe, young players last season. You got Greenwood, Rashford. The team is ready made to go. And I feel like Solskjaer has just left a really nice foundation, probably the best foundation any manager could want. And I think that's why we've got such a good crop of potential managers now. I think some managers will look at the team and think, I don't have to do a 2 to 3 year revamp like what Van Gaal did, like what Mourinho did. They're ready to go. And for me, if Pochettino comes in, who's my favourite, he's got a team which I think matches him in terms of really young talent. He's got some players who are experienced. But this is the reason why I don't think Pochettino may want to come now. And that's due to the fact that he may want to get a trophy under his belt before he comes, which all the other candidates have at the moment. Ten Hag's got lots of titles. Brendan Rodgers has got a few titles under his belt. Maybe Pochettino just wants to come in and be like, I'm a champion. I've come in. I've got my title. No one can question that. But I think he's the only candidate right now who could come right now because I feel like he's desperate to come back to the Premier League. And I don't think PSG is not a good club to justify how good a manager is, because Thomas Tuchel got sacked a year ago. Laurent Blanc is a decent manager. He got sacked. Ancelotti is a great manager. He went. It's not a good club to kind of scale how good of a manager you really are.
Well, yeah, you need to win the Champions League at PSG.
That's the bare minimum.
Well,
they're
11 points ahead already in legal with...
They're going to win the league, basically.
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah, they are.
We'll keep you up to date with the latest as it unfolds in terms of the next Manchester United manager. On Football Social Daily, make sure you have subscribed, click follow, whatever it is you have to do in the podcasting app that you use, and you'll get the next show as soon as it's ready. We're going to move on in a second, but just time to tell you that we have teamed up with Beer 52 ahead of the festive season. Christmas is creeping up on all of us. And we all know the most important thing about Christmas is making sure you've got a well-stocked fridge, right? Not just for yourself, but also when you get those various random visitors in over the Christmas period who demand weird drinks. So if you were coming round to Chez Salverson to my house for Christmas, what would be your go-to drink now? What would you ask for?
Well, hopefully not an ale that's been kept in the fridge, because that is ale drinkers' is cardinal sin number one, is you keep ale at room temperature. No, over Christmas... You know, I do quite like a cold lager. I do. Mm. I'm not always a lager drinker, but I do think at Christmas you can sink a few nice cold lagers.
Yeah.
When
nice
the weather's
Kolsch or something like
that. When it's crisp outside. Yeah. So something maybe German or even something Belgian maybe from Europe. So yeah, that would be my drink of choice, I think.
What are you having, Joel?
Oof, good question. Depends on the mood. I do like a good Tea Maria. Coffee and cream.
So Bailey's man, is he?
No, I wouldn't see that coming.
Just you know, one little ice cube in there, not shaken, not stirred.
Right, well, whatever it is your guests want over Christmas, as long as it's beer and not Tia Maria, you can get it.
Oh yeah, but I do like a beer, if that's the topic.
You can get it with a little bit of help from Beer 52. So Beer 52 is a beer club that sends you great beers from around the world every single month right up to your door. You can pick light beer, you can pick dark beer, or if you can't make up your mind or you want something for those visitors that might not like what you like, you can get yourself a mixed case as well. So even if your thing is a fruity IPA, which is what I'm into, by the way, I like a fruity IPA, but then your cousin pops around and asks for a caramel porter or something along those lines, you can go, sure, I've got you covered. I've got one in the fridge. So here's the deal with Beer 52. If you're new to Beer 52, you can get a box of 8 beers for free just by paying the postage. But even better than that, because you listen to Football Social Daily and we love you, we're going to sort you out with 2 extra bonus beers in that box. So that is 10 free beers. All you have to do is pay the postage of £5.95. Head to beer52.com/football. Get there before the 17th of December. Place your order and Beer 52 will send you that crate of 10 free beers. They'll give you a craft beer magazine as well. A few snacks thrown into the box too. It's the ideal thing to fill your festive fridge up over the festive period, and also makes a really good present for your dad if you don't think he needs any more socks or novelty golf balls or something like that. Go to beer52.com/football. After redeeming the first case, you'll join the monthly beer club, which is £24 a month, but there's no minimum commitment. You can cancel at any time if you don't want to be part of it anymore. If you just want your free beer box, you can take that and leave. Or you can carry on and continue to get different craft beers, dark or light or both, delivered to your door every single month, which feels like a bit of a no-brainer to me. But do what you want to do. Go and check it out. beer52.com/football. We're going to get back onto the football next. We're going to talk about some of the transfer rumours. We'll do it next on Football Social Daily.
Football Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode. Football Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
Welcome back to Football Social Daily. Let's talk transfers. We've talked a lot about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, so we'll rattle through the transfer section on today's podcast. There is rumours in Spain right now from a Spanish footballing magazine called, I think it's pronounced, Fichas. Is that right? Or you speak a little bit of Spanish, Niall. F-I-C-H-A-J-E-S.
I would have gone for Fichajes.
Wow, Fichajes. Well, anyway, it's a something football magazine. Like it's based in Spain, and they think that Mason Mount isn't feeling the love at Chelsea at the moment. And that lack of love has alerted the attention of some big clubs, including Manchester City and Bayern Munich and Real Madrid, who are all potentially interested in bringing Mount. I mean, it feels like a weird one, this, Niall, that Mason Mount could be on the way out of Chelsea. He's a Chelsea lad. He feels like one of their most promising young players, still only 22. Chelsea would be foolish to let him go, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and I don't see any truth in this. I don't know where this Spanish newspaper's got this from. I mean, what's their link to Mason Mount? Because according to the report,
I guess it's the Real Madrid interest.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I guess it's one of those things where, why would Mason Mount leave Chelsea right now? He's missed a few games because he had his wisdom teeth taken out and he had a bit of pain in his mouth, and so he wasn't able to play or really concentrate on playing for a couple of weeks. So he missed a game or two before the international break. He withdrew from the England squad due to that pain. He's had those wisdom teeth taken out and he'll be back in the Chelsea fold before too long. Now, I find it weird to suggest he's not feeling the love. I mean, Thomas Tuchel is not shy to make changes to the Chelsea team. You look at someone like Trevo Chalobah, who's a young player who's been given games. Ben Chilwell, who was rested due to mental tiredness, according to Thomas Tuchel, for a large chunk of the start of the season, has come back and hit the ground running, to say the least. He scored loads of goals from that left-back position. So I don't think Mason Mount is being neglected or even underused. And he's a very good player, Mason Mount. There's no doubt about it. One of England's finest young players. I can't see him leaving Chelsea. Chelsea could be on course for a Premier League title. It'll be Mason Mount's first domestic title, especially as a league champion. He's won the Champions League. He's an England regular. I mean, a move to Real Madrid or Bayern Munich might light the eyes up, but why would he leave Chelsea? He's worked hard to get into that position. He's made that position his own at times. Obviously, it's a competitive squad at the moment. I just don't see, as you say, why Chelsea would let him go, for one. And secondly, why he would want to leave. So I'm not sure if I believe this too much, particularly in January, with the January window coming around the corner. Mason Mount leaving Chelsea in the January window would be the biggest story of the January window by far. So I can't see that one happening. I can understand why clubs would be interested in him, because he's a very good player. But in terms of actual concrete evidence of a move away from Chelsea, I'm not buying it.
I guess it could be a contract issue. We've seen big name players come into Chelsea over the last 12 months. They will no doubt be on big money as well. And whether Mason Mount's contract matches up to the likes of Romelu Lukaku, we don't know. We're not inside the Chelsea accounting department. But is this an issue that Chelsea have in general, Joel? That you get it with a lot of teams. They have such a wealth of talent available. They have so many players. And let's not forget, Chelsea have got Conor Gallagher and Billy Gilmore out on loan at the moment. So there's good young players that can't even get anywhere near the team. That when you have this wealth of talent available, it's really difficult to keep everyone happy.
It's a really good problem to have, though, and they're all top quality players. I don't really understand where this story's come from. I feel like it's just an international break kind of click bait paper talk nonsense. But you got to do what you got to do for your newspaper. But honestly, if you're going to look at this objectively and think, okay, it could happen, like you said, I feel like Conor Gallagher is a player who's kind of ready made to fill those boots a little bit, because he's looked so impressive for Crystal Palace this year. Probably one of the players who went under the radar when he went on loan. I don't think many people would have expected him to end up in the England side by November. And I think that's testament to how well Vieira has set up that Crystal Palace side. It's been probably one of my favourite teams to watch so far this season. But yeah, Mason Mount's a player who has been a kind of kingpin in that side. He's been one of the main midfielders that Thomas Tuchel's trusted, especially since that Champions League win. He's a regular fixture for England, which is obviously related to how well his Chelsea form is. So it makes zero sense to me why you would jeopardise any of that while his stock's super high at the moment.
He would cost the club at least £85 million, at least.
Because that's what his value to them is, isn't it?
He's under contract until 2024.
So he's no poker contract games then, is it really? It's more a case of just...
He signed a five-year deal in 2019, so he runs out of his contract in 2024, I think. And that's madness. I mean, he might just want a few more quid, which is understandable.
Are we essentially, I mean, we're saying this is bull, aren't we?
Pretty much.
I don't buy it.
Okay, well, let's call it bull and let's move on. Let's move on to a report in the Liverpool Echo who are saying that Rafa Benitez is looking to splash some cash this January, which you can see considering how Everton are doing at the moment after a decent start after Benitez. They've really dropped off in recent weeks. So if Benitez is going to be given a, I think war chest is the common term, isn't it? Heading into January.
I love that cliche.
Do you know what? I might buy a cliche bell for Christmas.
Have we lost our cliche bell?
It must be around somewhere. Is it in the drawer, Jim? This is some live rummaging. No, not a war chest. Well, Joel, you're new to the sports social team, or relatively new. So when we first started doing Football Social Daily, we used to have a cliche bell, which is just like a service bell that we would ding every time someone says a football cliche. Have you found it?
No, I found 25 pence.
Drop it on the floor. Yeah, we don't have a cliche bell.
I'll buy one as our sports social Christmas gift. I'll get one.
I think it cost me about £3 on eBay, that one when I got it. Right, so anyway, Liverpool Echo reporting Benitez has some money to spend in Everton. If he does have money to spend, what does he need to spend it on, Joel?
It's a weird one at Everton because I'm just looking at their injuries and they've been pretty unlucky with injuries. I mean, you've got Dominic Calvert-Lewin's been out for a good like 6 weeks. Doucouré, who's been one of their main powerhouses in the midfield, has been out for a long time. Richarlison's been in and out. Yerry Mina's been out. Tom Davis has been out. Like, they have a long string of injuries.
Demarai Gray's injured,
and he was in incredible form when he first signed him. The only worry I have with Benitez is that when you sign players like Demarai Gray and Andros Townsend, they're kind of like what I would call flavour of the month type players, where they'll have an amazing October, they get five goals, they get player of the month, and then suddenly they just die off for a good 2 months. And that's not to say the bad players or the bad quality, but that's what separates the best from the rest, that they can continuously do it week in, week out. And I think he's been really unlucky with injuries. And I feel like, you know, when Dominic Calvert-Lewin comes back, and I think he got, what, like 18 goals last season in the Prem, which is a really good return. If a striker like that is out of your side for a good period of time, of course you're going to suffer. And of course you're not going to get as many goals as you would like to. So I feel for him a little bit. Maybe he does need a couple of reinforcements. But for me, it's just the case of trying to get over that line of the Christmas period. Because obviously, if you go into that period with a crazy ton of injuries, and we know how relentless the fixture list is when it gets to December, then you start tailing off and it can become a bit of a different story. And it's crazy because, you know, when Everton came to Old Trafford and they got that 1-0 draw against us, they were really impressive in terms of defensively. But that was prior to them getting all those injuries. So I think it's just the case of biding the time, maybe getting a couple of defensive reinforcements, because they have been leaking a crazy amount of goals. Watford have been killing everyone by like 4 or 5 in the last couple of weeks. So I think they need to potentially get a couple of reinforcements in that area. But I think going forward, they just... Like I said, it's a case of waiting for the recovery team to get on the case and start getting the main players back, which is always a difficult time at this time of year.
Is it injuries, Niall, the reason that it's not really working for Benitez at the moment? Because there were some doubts from Everton fans when he got the job, but I think the general consensus was he was going to go in there and he was going to do a decent job, but it doesn't really seem to have happened yet.
Well, he did at the start. He did do a very decent job to begin with. I think Everton were up and around the top of the league after the first 5 or 6 games, but you know, the last batch of 5 games has been really poor for Everton. They lost some really poor games. They lost to Wolves. They lost to Watford. They conceded 5 against Watford and they crumbled at Goodison Park. And Goodison Park's normally a bit of a fortress for Everton. But definitely think injuries has got something to do with it. I think they've got 8 injuries or injury doubts at the moment. As Joel says, players like Calvert-Lewin, Holgate, Decore, Richarlison as well, Yerry Mina, Tom Davis, Andre Gomez and Tamari Gray. Now, they're all players, all 8 of those players that would get in an Everton matchday squad. There's no doubt about that. And you mentioned in January, what should Rafa Benitez spend his money on? I think a big old case of red wine, Jim, to be honest, because that's what I'd be drinking on the touchline to get me through this period, because it's always tough when you've got your big players out injured. Now, I think Calvert-Lewin's been a huge miss.
Massive. Especially because he got called up to the England squad as well just before that injury. He's starting to really...
I just think people don't realise how good and how important Calvert-Lewin was last season. He really was massive for them. And I actually think in terms of a profile and an all-round striker, he's the one player in the Premier League, particularly English player, who I think is as close to the real deal as you can get. He can head the ball, he can finish from close range. I mean, what his real skill is, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, is finishing with one touch. The amount of goals he scores just with one touch, he very rarely, when he's in front of goal, needs to take more than one or two touches to put the ball in the back of the net. It's remarkable. It's instinctive finishing, and that's what you need as a striker, particularly when you've got a team like Everton who don't create a million chances a game. You need someone who's between the posts to stick them away, and Dominic Calvert-Lewin does that. But you also need to look at the defensive side of things, and Everton keep conceding goals, and that's a huge issue. And Rafa Benitez, we tend to think of him as a defensive manager, someone who can shore things up and keep things tight at the back. Well, like I said, they conceded 5 against Watford. They were conceding goals again at the weekend and conceding chances. So, you know, naturally, when you come up against a team like Manchester City, you are going to concede goals. They conceded 3, obviously. But it's just one of those things where I think Rafa Benitez, when the going gets tough because of the nature of the way he took the Everton job, and he's a former Liverpool manager, and some of the abuse he received and some of the threats were unacceptable, in my opinion. You know, he's only a man who's trying to do a job. And I still think that even though those things are unacceptable, definitely there is going to be some sort of hostility towards Benitez. I think the fuse is short with Benitez. I mean, any credit in the bank that he would have from a decent start would be eroding very, very, very quickly. So whether in January it's go and spend money, who knows? But we always say this about Everton. You know, we always say this every summer, every January, they've got to go and spend money. And they do. They spend loads of money. But they just, when do they ever get it right?
Yeah.
You know, they signed Alan, who was a really good sign. And James Rodriguez has come and gone. It was a one-season flop, I suppose you could say. He was mediocre at best. Dominic Calvert-Lewin, they signed from Sheffield United 4 years ago for pennies. And, you know, he's been one of their best signings in recent years. So, you know, you just have to look at their recruitment, maybe. I mean, Marcel Brands is the sporting director at Everton, and he's quite fondly thought of by the powers that be at the club, and indeed the fans as well in some quarters. But I just think that the track record that Everton have made in terms of signings hasn't been great.
I mean, Gylfi Sigurdsson, 50 million.
Yeah,
and it doesn't seem to work. They just don't. The signings, when you look at them, they seem like they've gone
on paper. They look quite quality.
Awobi,
no one thought that was right. But
Yerry Mina, 25 million. You could go on and on. They're making crazy recruitment signings.
Looks like they might well splash the cash again this coming January. The window opens.
With those signings.
6 weeks to go until the January window opens now. And there are loads of rumours about people who could go where. There's loads of new managers in posts at the moment. And we've already said the general consensus is when you bring a manager in at this stage, they have time to assess their squad and then potentially spend money in January. You've got Conte, who wants to bring in Zanilogo, is it, from Roma. Gerrard wants to bring in Brassic from Rangers. Newcastle have got money burning a hole in their pocket. Do you think we're going to see a really busy January transfer window, particularly coming off the back of last year with the whole COVID scenario where there weren't that many transfers? Do you think this year we're going to see a whole load of money being spent in January?
I think potentially, especially for those sides who've just got new managers, which is quite a lot. I think Gerrard is probably going to get a couple of additions, but I think mainly it's going to be Newcastle. Not in terms of going for these outlandish, like Coutinho and all of these. I think they're going to be quite smart with the recruitment. I think Eddie Howe, he's a really good recruiter, as we've seen in the last few years. He's quite smart in the market, and I'm sure he'll be even better with the funds that apparently they've got available. But I think considering how many managers have just changed in the last months, and I think there probably will be another couple before we actually get to January, every manager is going to want to try and start to mould the team. But as we know, the January transfer window is a little bit strange in terms of availability.
It's boring.
It is.
The January transfer window is so boring. Honestly, do you know the last two summers where we've had COVID and a lot of people have said, oh my gosh, clubs have got no money. They've not had fans in stadiums. The revenue streams are down. It's costing clubs a fortune. The transfer windows in the summer aren't going to be that exciting. We've had two massive summer transfer windows. Just think of the last one, Ronaldo coming to the Premier League. And the one before, there was hundreds of millions of pounds spent in that transfer window. But January, everyone gets excited about it. It's so boring.
Jesse Lingard's going to come back to West Ham. That's a good reason to get excited.
It's a reason enough to get excited. But let me tell you about deadline day last January. Can you remember any sign-ins from January deadline day last year?
I only remember Jim White screaming his head off in a yellow tie.
Well, okay, you can't think of any. And this is why. Deadline day in the Premier League. Ainsley Maitland-Niles, Arsenal to West Brom on loan. Joe Willock, Arsenal to Newcastle on loan. Ben Davis, Preston to Liverpool for £500,000. Ozan Kabak, Schalke to Liverpool on loan.
It's an emergency window, isn't it?
There's no reason to get excited. It's one of those things where I can't remember the last exciting January window there was and the last time a big player arrived in January. Maybe Bruno Fernandes was the last big name player, impact player, but he's only a big name player now because of the impact he's made at Manchester United.
Honestly, I think the last one I can remember is Torres.
From Liverpool to Chelsea.
On the deadline day.
See, it's hard in January.
Virgil van Dijk,
massive signing. Massive signing for Liverpool. But, you know, in recent years, I think people get all too caught up about the January transfer window. It's never big name signings. It's always player here, player there. Yeah. Players like, no disrespect to your team, West Ham, someone like Thomas Soucek. You'd imagine clubs signing a player like him in January because he's an inauspicious signing. He's been brilliant. I don't think that you signed him in January. I'm not sure whether you did or not. Maybe you did. I can't remember.
I think we did. I think we signed him on a six-month loan deal in January and then got him on a full deal at the end with an option to buy kind of scenario, I think.
Those are the sorts of deals that you'll see.
Yeah. And we got Vidic and Evra in January as well. Mm. It's the kind of signings where...
But who was Vidic playing for at the time? Belgrade or something.
Yeah, it's the kind of month where the big players are never going to leave unless it's a crazy offer because they know in the summer they can have an amazing amount of options. And especially now, there's so many players who are waiting to run their contracts down that I feel like there'll obviously be a lot of pre-contract signed in January. It seems like that's the way football's going at the moment, where a lot of the big players are seeing that it's actually in their benefit to not sign a contract and wait until they're a free agent. So I think January, I think there's a hell of a lot of top players who are out of contracts in the summer. Like Frankie Kessie's one of the best players in Serie A who's going to be out of contract. And then you've got Kylian Mbappe who's out of contract in the summer. There's a lot of big deals to be done, and I think clubs are going to be hovering around that area more than the actual paying for area.
I think we might see a more interesting January window than we have previously, and I think it's 100% going to be fueled and funded by Newcastle United, who currently find themselves bottom of the Premier League and have got cash to spend. We'll keep you up to date with the news as and when it happens, but we're going to wrap up today's podcast with a game of heroes and villains, and we'll do it next on Football Social Daily.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk. Football's Social Daily. Subscribe to the podcast now so you never miss an episode.
All right, last bit of today's Football Social Daily. Welcome back. We're going to pick our heroes and villains from the weekend. Who deserves a thumbs up? Who deserves a thumbs down? You can go first, Niall. You can pick your hero.
My hero, who's going to come and save me wearing his cape, his yellow and green cape, Dean Smith. Dean Smith. You can't take Dean Smith away from me as your hero, John, because he beat Southampton. Second week in a row where he's faced Southampton. Of course, last time was with Aston Villa. 8 days later, after his dismissal, he gets the Norwich job. He wasn't out of work for very long. Comes into a Norwich side who had previously won their last game before the international break against Brentford. Now, that was a huge win because that sliced the gap to safety, and I think the gap went from something like 8 points to 5 points, and now it's even less because Newcastle United couldn't get the job done in their game at the weekend, their first game under Eddie Howe, albeit Eddie Howe wasn't there. So Dean Smith with a victory over Southampton, big win, new manager bounce. Whether that's going to continue, we'll have to wait and see, but certainly he's instilled hope, and I think what he said in his pre-match press conference was absolutely what the Norwich fans needed to hear. It was, there's 27 games to go of this Premier League season. There is a bunch of points left to play for. Let's not write ourselves off just yet. And we've all written Norwich off. I still think they'll go down, by the way. But I still think that now that Smith's come in with what he said, that that certainly lends itself to more hope for the Norwich fans and those Norwich players. And that's Dean Smith's job, is to come in and instill a bit of hope and get some results and improve performances, something Daniel Farke couldn't do. And he did it at the weekend. They performed well. They beat Southampton by 2-1. Still work to be done, still improvements to be made. No doubt about that. But a big victory for Dean Smith. Well done to him. And long may it continue from his perspective and from Norwich's perspective, because even if they do go down, they've got a manager who knows how to get out of the Championship. He's done it with Aston Villa. He was very impressive with Brentford before that as well. So I think they've made a good appointment. And according to Stuart Webber, the sporting director at Norwich, Dean Smith's been on the radar for a while. So as soon as he became available, I think that it was almost immediate contact from Norwich to Dean Smith, as if to say, come and join us. And I think it's looking like an astute appointment already, albeit after one game. It's pretty early and we'll wait and see what happens in the next couple of weeks, particularly leading up to Christmas, where the fixtures get really intense and busy. But what a start for Dean Smith. So an award for hero this weekend for me from the weekend's games for that 2-1 Norwich win over Southampton.
Next two Norwich games, Wolverhampton Wanderers at home and then Newcastle United away.
That's massive in 2 weeks, that game against Newcastle, isn't it?
Yeah, both huge. Those games are big. I mean, if they win the both of those, that's four wins from four.
After losing none of losing completely. All of the last 20.
Very different perspective on things. I'll give you a bit more time to rethink your hero. I've if you're going it, for got it. You've got it. If you're all right, go on, Joel. You can step up.
I had a reserve in place.
Go on then.
I'm going to go with Claudio Ranieri just because I kind of felt sorry for him now that I'm reflecting on the game, because in all the madness of, you know, obviously United dominated all the headlines, like his Watford side played out of their skin on Sunday. I mean, considering, yeah, we were very, very bad. And I think a Sunday league team probably would have turned us over on Sunday. But considering how they got absolutely thumped by Liverpool, then obviously they won at Everton 5-2, and then suddenly the results started to turn. They lost at home to Southampton, lost away to Arsenal. And then to kind of react to that against a club like United at home, where they outran every single one of the United players, they looked like they had a system in place. They were playing attacking football. And I really like Ranieri just because I feel like he galvanises a team so well. Just in terms of like buying pizzas for them when they win and beers on the bus if they score one goal, like he really makes everyone feel like they're part of a family rather than just like a collective. And it's, I want to be part of his team because I want pizzas as well.
It's quite funny that one Italian is banned ketchup and mayonnaise Conte. At the training ground and another has been buying pizzas.
So which one works?
It's kind of like a similar manager, and this will sound disrespectful to Ranieri, but it's almost like a similar approach to Alan Pardew. So Alan Pardew had a habit of going into a football club and he'd make everyone feel like they were part of a team, but it would be a very short-term thing because that good feeling, that initial lift, only lasts for a set period of time, and then it's just the norm, then it doesn't really work anymore. But also that kind of making people feel part of a team and feeling good only has a short-term effect, because ultimately eventually it's just a boys club. And a boys' club doesn't have respect. Mm. So at some point, that initial kind of manager comes in, does really well.
It works for Ranieri for a season with Leicester.
And you know what? It works for Watford as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because Watford don't hold on to managers for longer than a year and a half.
They're only 4 points from safety as well. So they're going to need that stardust to continue for a little while. Yeah, obviously 40 points is that
golden
magic
mark.
And there's still some way off of that. So still work to be done, definitely.
Right, Ranieri is Joel's hero. My hero is Jason Steele at Brighton and Hove Albion.
A very left choice.
Yeah, well, considering they lost 2-0 and he was the goalkeeper, it is a bit of a controversial choice, but I actually thought he had a great game. And at the age of 31, he made his Premier League debut. It's his first ever game in the Premier League. And I think sometimes being a number two or a number three goalkeeper in any football team, it's like an unsung hero job.
There's no Darren Randolph.
I remember hearing an interview with Rob Green when he was at Chelsea. You remember he went to Chelsea for a season, his third choice goalkeeper. And he said his job that season was sitting, watching football and drinking tea. That was like what he did. So I think it's kind of like a bit of a, you live your life in the shadows. And when you get that moment to step into the limelight, you need to take it. And I think Jason Steele did at the weekend. I think he had a great performance against Brighton, even though they deserve to win, and he put in a good performance, but they didn't win. So he is my hero from the weekend.
Can I add in one quick final hero?
Yeah.
And we can do this very, very quickly. I want to mention, even though he doesn't play in the Premier League anymore, Sergio Aguero, who looks like he's going to retire due to a heart problem. Really sad news for him. And he's a Premier League legend. Caused Joel some real no pun intended, heartache.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't want to say that. But yeah,
he obviously felt some issues with his heart when playing for Barcelona a couple of weeks ago. He's since had scans and it looks like now he's going to retire. That's not officially announced yet, but what a player.
Yeah,
what an absolute legend of the Premier League. Some of the records he's broken have been unbelievable. The impact he's made for Manchester City in turning them from a decent club into a powerhouse can't be understated. So, yeah, I think we should give special mention to Sergio Aguero, because in a couple of days' time, it looks like we could see an announcement that he's retiring from the game, which is really sad.
Arguably the best ever foreign import to the Premier League.
Quite possibly.
Certainly one of the best five. And I was actually having a conversation with my son this morning. So my son has decided he's a Manchester City fan and he was getting ready for football. He's playing football tonight, had his Manchester City shirt on, and he spotted the number in the back. The, what is it, 93... 93-20. Yeah. So what's the number about? And I was like, okay.
YouTube, straight up.
Yeah, I was explaining the situation and the significance of Sergio Aguero.
Don't give me PTSD, Jim.
It's very much a hero anyway from the Premier League era. Let's do villains very quickly. I'll go quickly because mine is a quick one. My villain is whoever decided to give Eddie Howe COVID. Because I felt quite sorry for Eddie Howe. There's been so much made of his coming into the Newcastle job and what he might do there. And he missed his first game in the dugout as Newcastle United manager. Apparently he was making calls to the dressing room and calls to the manager or the interim or the
Jason
coaches.
Tindall, the assistant.
Jason Tindall, yeah. Okay. Mm. He was making calls to him throughout the game to mastermind a performance. But I think instantly, if you see that Newcastle game, you can see the impact that Eddie Howe has had on that team, yep. Particularly making Joelinton look a half-decent player, which is no mean feat in itself. So the fact he couldn't enjoy that welcome from the St. James's Park crowd as he walked into that job for the very first time, I think was a bit of a disappointment for him. So whoever gave him the vid, they are my villain, I think, for today. Who's your villain, Joel?
I'm going to go with Harry Maguire. I just don't think it's been his finest month at all. Just stemming from that celebration for England with his hands on his ears and then next week he gets sent off. I mean, it's quite comedy, isn't it, really? Mm. And I feel like he just needs a break from the side to just kind of get his head together. Because
can you afford to drop him?
Yes, I feel like we can, because he's been the cause of many of our goals.
He's suspended, so you haven't got a choice.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for us, because, my God, he's been... No wonder David De Gea looked absolutely distraught after that game when his club captain's doing stupid stuff like that in front of him after saving two penalties, and he gets him out of the dirt every single week when he starts trying to do these mazy runs from outside the box and does a touch which looks like a shot. So I'm going to go with Harry Maguire, and I pray for him that he starts to get his act together soon, because he's looking an absolute liability in the United side at the moment.
Do you think redemption is on the cards, though? Do you think a new manager can come in and give him a lift and make him back into the player that you thought you bought from Leicester City?
Yeah, but let's not forget, he wasn't... For England, he looks like Maldini, and for United, he looks like Titus Bramble. I mean, there's just there's no in-between.
It's harsh on Titus Bramble.
Shout out to Titus Bramble. but yeah, there's no, like... You don't get sevens out of tens from him. It's only a four, and mainly a four because I can't remember the last eight he's given us.
But I actually think he was quite good in the first half. A couple of really important tackles against Watford, a couple of goal-saving challenges.
But then no one remembers that when you start doing those stupid lunges, which then ended up leaving us with two goals again conceded.
Well, I understand that. I actually thought Bruno Fernandes was United's worst player at the weekend, but that's another conversation.
I think now, clean slate, we go for it. Maguire can have a week off and he needs it, because he's not had the best week at all, and he's made himself look quite silly after that England kind of celebration where a striker, after not scoring for 20 games, does that celebration, not a defender.
Although I think I felt he was hard done by for that celebration. I thought there was more of a meal made out of it than maybe should be.
But then it looks more comedic now after he gets sent off the following week.
A little bit. Go on, take us home, Niall. Final villain of the piece.
The harshest villain of the day would go to Raheem Sterling at Manchester City. Now, hear me out here, because he did score in their victory over Everton and actually played pretty well. And obviously there are suggestions that he could be leaving Manchester City in the summer to maybe explore new avenues. A club abroad, perhaps, is certainly what's been talked about. But he missed one of the easiest chances I've seen all season in the game against Everton. It was in the last 15 minutes. City had the counter-attack. The ball was beautifully played on the inside channel. I can't remember who it was on the overlap, but the ball came across from the sort of right-wing position. And he was 6 yards out, unmarked. All he had to do was tap the ball beyond Jordan Pickford. And he couldn't do it.
Mm.
and he is the most frustrating player in the Premier League.
If you've not seen the replay, it is a tap-in. And it's almost like he wants to take a touch and take it round the keeper. But he doesn't need to because he's got an open net in front of him and can just side-foot it in. I don't understand the thinking there. So but, he is a superb player. Yeah. He's an excellent player.
Well, it's not denigrating his qualities as a player. He's a very, very good player. You know, one of the best we've seen in the Premier League. 300 appearances, 98 goals. I mean, in terms of in recent years in the Premier League, I'm not saying he's like an all-time Premier League great, particularly if he leaves, then maybe that will be up for debate. But 300 appearances, that was his 300th game against Everton, 98 goals. Imagine how many goals he could have if he actually could finish. He's honestly one of the worst finishers I've seen in a long, long time. And everyone knows it. City fans know it. Probably the staff know it. Probably Raheem knows it as well. And it's just one of those things that if he could add that finishing to his game, he would be, and he is, when he's on his game and he is finishing well, he is one of the best players in the Premier League, if not in Europe. But he can't finish from 6 yards. It's not the first time that I've seen him do that.
There's been big occasions in the Champions League. They probably could have won it that year when there was no fans. And that last kick of the game, he missed in Guardiola's face.
He's so frustrating.
Yeah,
can you coach that into a game, though? Can you coach that into a player?
He's only 26.
It's not a technique thing, though, is it? It's a mental thing, it's decision making. Yes. I mean, that was pure decision making.
Like I was saying earlier about Dominic Calvert-Lewin, just shoot. Just hit the ball, kick the ball.
He does try and shoot, but he doesn't go in the net.
Well, even the amazing ball from Joao Cancelo for Sterling's first goal.
Yeah.
I'm still not convinced he meant to stick the ball there, Raheem Sterling.
Sterling's a very instinctive player.
I don't think he cleanly connects with that ball.
When he has too much time to think, it's almost as if he can't decide where he needs to go. When it's instinctive, he's a great finisher.
Go and hang out with someone like Ian Wright. I know Ian Wright's a fair bit older and hasn't played in the Premier League for years, but he's always used to say something on TV when he goes through one-on-one, just go cold. That's what he would tell himself. Go cold. Turn to ice. Forget about everything. Don't think about anything. Just go cold. And he would just finish the ball off. And Ian Wright was very, very good at one-on-ones. Raheem Sterling, not so much. I don't understand why he made such a meal of it. Was he off balance? Did he fall over? It's only one chance in one game. It's a game in which he scored, and it's going to come across really harsh.
It's quite harsh.
It's harsh to call him a villain for the weekend. And
do you think the coaching side spotted it?
It's more from frustration. I'm so frustrated, and I have no affiliation to Manchester City whatsoever. But he could just be an unbelievably better player if he could finish. 98 goals in 300 games, 51 assists. The numbers are there. He could be on 125 goals by now if he could actually finish. So that would be, for me, the frustration with Raheem Sterling. I'm interested to know what City fans actually think, because I'm sounding quite frustrated here and exasperated. And I'm not, as I say, in any way affiliated to Manchester City at all. So if there are any City fans out there listening to the show, am I being harsh? Am I right? Is he a bad finisher? Or is it just from what I've seen and what I remember? I want to know. So anyone that can get in touch on Twitter at The Sports Social, let us know, let me know, because it's been bugging me for a while now. And I didn't want to give him the villain of the piece for this weekend because he scored and City won 3-0. But you can't miss chances like that. And it's lucky that City creates so many, because if they didn't, like Joel says, and he misses in the last minute of a Champions League game to send them through, I mean, that's where the frustration comes from. So, yeah, sorry, Raheem, you played very well apart from that moment. But why do you keep missing chances? What's the reason?
It is a bit harsh, but I'd love to hear the views of Man City as well. Man City fans at The Sports Social on Twitter. You can get us there, or you can leave a review on this podcast and leave your comments there as well, because that is it for today's show. Cole Palmer, by the way, looked absolutely superb in that game, I thought. Real talent.
Could have given a hero to James McAtee as well, who came on off the bench, made his City debut, and was only on for about 5 minutes and looked really good.
Yeah.
And then forced Gary Neville to say that they were all clones of each other, all of the City players, which I thought was quite a nice line of commentary, but... Yeah, they've really built something there at City, and they've got some young players coming through that look really good.
When you buy every single decent young player in England, you're going to turn up a couple of decent ones, aren't you? The odds are there. That is it for Football Social Daily. Thank you very much for your time listening. Appreciate your ears. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Get the next one as soon as it's ready. We'll be back again tomorrow with no doubt more news on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's replacement at Manchester United, and we'll see you then.
Football's Social Daily. Find more great sport at sport-social.co.uk.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.